I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There is nothing that says Stanley Cup playoffs like the Sunshine State Series between the Lightning and the Florida Panthers.
What do you think Mike Wilbon thinks of this?
I don't know. We should ask him. We'll probably hear. They're waiting for the SEC practice in the fall. Listen, I got to say that when the Lightning were down 3-2 and coming home to Tampa Bay, I wasn't sure that they would force a Game 7. I really didn't think they were going to win Game 7 in Toronto. And the way they did it was even more remarkable to me. Like, when did this team decide to show up from the last 2 years? And on top of that, more heartache for Toronto, obviously. But say hello to Nick Paul, who had not had a playoff goal and gets two, both goals for the Lightning. Vasi was tremendous again. But the way they locked it down, Steve, with the 2-1 lead, that was vintage 2020, 2021.
In the last six series clinching games for the Lightning, Andrei Vasilevskiy's given up one goal.
Stupid.
That was Saturday night in Toronto. He had five straight shutouts prior to that.
He's slipping. What you're saying is he's slipping.
Yes. The Lightning, and the reason they have been so successful for the last 3 years now,
yeah,
is because they learned how to lock it down defensively.
Yeah.
A hard lesson they learned in 2019 in the playoffs.
That's true.
When they set records, 128 points, 62 wins. You go into your first round series against Columbus, you have a 3-0 lead in the first period.
Yeah, I was
and
there.
And you get swept. They were too busy trying to put pucks in the net instead of keeping out of their own. And that's what John Cooper has preached for 3 years now. You hear him say it all the time. It's not about what you put in the net. It's what you keep out.
That's right.
Offense comes and goes. But defense wins.
It's kind of like my diet. Yeah, well. It's not what you put in your mouth. It's what you keep out. When you think about it.
It is. But anyway, it really is.
Yeah.
But they put on a clinic on Saturday night again. I find it laughable that you go to some of the advanced metric stats in this, and Toronto, based on the way play was, should have won 73% of the simulations out of a 10,000 simulation. I'm like, no.
They were their favorite, yeah.
I'm like, did they outplay Tampa Bay in that game? Maybe some. Did they have more possession? Yes. They had 14 shots through two periods. That was it. They had a lot of possession. They had no shots. Tampa Bay was locking it down defensively.
They blocked 25, is that right? Something like that?
They blocked a lot. I'm going to the stats.
I think it was in the 20s, wasn't it? It was something incredible that I was like, wow, that's a lot of blocked shots. Now, they completely sold out on the defensive side. I mean, with a two to one lead.
26 attempts blocked.
26. So here's the thing. Like, the previous two games, game six, and Game 5, which they lost for Game 5, they won Game 6, they had 2-0 leads. And, you know, and John Cooper said after the game, that should have been enough goals. And I thought, well, come on. This was a more highly scoring, you know, series. Vasi had given up at least three goals in every game. But you know what? He knew what he was talking about. He had seen it before. When they're up 2-0 in a game, it might be the first period or the end of the first period, he feels like that should be enough. You know, because they've made it enough. And it was enough in that building in Toronto with people going crazy to lock it down against them. And that's what won them the cup the previous 2 years. And, of course, what can you say about Andrei Vasilevskiy? I mean, when you give up one goal in a clinching game and that's a step backwards, that's really remarkable. And we're watching, you know, other goaltenders that had great regular seasons struggle in the postseason. You said it going in, like, there's question marks everywhere with these other teams and some of their goaltending, and even the ones that had good regular seasons. What they didn't have is what Vasi has, which is two rings. and a knack for you get him in an elimination game as the players voted. They don't want another guy in the net. If you got to win one game to stay alive or to win a cup, they want Andre Vasilevskiy, and you could see why. He was tremendous, but they sold out as a team. They really did everything the right way and choked them out. Even with a man advantage down the stretch, you know, in the final 2 minutes or whatever, they were tremendous. And I really did not think they were going to win Game 7. I thought that this was going to be Toronto's time. Now, Toronto has demons too, but this was not about Toronto's, you know, history. That's a great Toronto team, and I think I think it's one of the better teams that I've watched in the playoffs. And I haven't watched every game, obviously. Now they're about to play the Florida Panthers, who had, you know, the most points in the NHL and was the best team all season. So it's obviously a step up in class as you move on. But this was a really good Toronto team that they beat. And it wasn't that Toronto played poorly in that final game.
I think this was the toughest team they've knocked out in the last 3 years.
And some of the players said that.
As evidenced by a Game 7, which was only happened twice, the Islanders last season and then the Maple Leafs this year. Mm-hmm. That Toronto is the best team they have faced in the playoffs the last 3 years.
Wow.
Now, yeah. Florida may be a better team than Toronto, and we'll see in the series and how it stacks up. And coming out of that, we may say Florida is the best team they faced in the last 3 years.
Right.
But compared to the last two runs, this Toronto team, that's a really good team. And when Austin Matthews says, we're right there, he's not wrong.
No, he's right.
They lost to a great Tampa Bay Lightning team that has a ton of experience and the best goalie in the world.
That is no consolation to Toronto fan who I heard on the radio who just dying. This one stung them as much as anything because they know they had a good team, and they had a team that may have, you know, had they gotten past the Lightning, may have gone very far. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But they're that talented, and they played that well and probably deserved a little better fate, but that's why you win cups.
It's almost a shame that this matchup happened in the first round.
It is.
I mean,
this would be a conference final.
This was the third and the fifth best teams in the Eastern Conference, which means, you know, had you seeded them 1 through 8, they wouldn't have played this round.
That's right.
Tampa Bay would have faced the Rangers, I believe. Toronto would have faced the Penguins.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would have been the same Bruins, Carolina, Florida, Washington, the same as it. Those would have stayed the same. But, you know, it's almost a shame because those teams are so good. But the NHL likes to keep the divisions together because they're trying to create rivalries, which, and we'll get to in a minute, the Florida rivalry. Now it's going to be a second straight year they face in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, this is something that the NHL has wanted for decades.
Right.
And they finally got it last year, and now they're going to get it 2 years in a row. And they're two really good teams both years.
Was it last year they didn't play any Canadian teams? Is that correct?
Montreal in the final. Yeah, I mean,
during the regular season.
Yeah, last year you only played your seven division teams. They redivided the divisions up, so you only played seven teams all year until you got to the second round of the playoffs.
But isn't it interesting that the teams they played the most, I believe, Carolina, Florida.
Nashville was in the playoffs this year, yeah.
Yeah. And advancing now to the second round with the Lightning is Carolina and Florida.
Yeah, Nashville didn't advance, but yes.
No, but I'm just saying, like, it's the same teams they played so many times, and they're so familiar with each other, but they're all really, really good. They've all elevated themselves. While the Lightning was busy winning Stanley Cups, they had to go through them. So, yeah, those teams are great. I wanted to talk about Nick Paul, and I wanted to talk about what the Lightning is able to do, you know, down the stretch by acquiring some of these players. We talked about him when he first got here, and, you know, he has that size, right? He's very physical. When you see him in person, it's amazing how much bigger than he really is than I thought he was. But he brought more than that. He brought a certain skill and playmaking ability with the puck. Like, we've seen highlight, you know, real passes and all this other stuff. But how about the clutch gene? How about this guy on both sides of the ice was the best player out there in that Game 7? It was incredible what he did on defense, and, of course, even more incredible that they got two goals from him.
And when they made the trade, if you think back to the trade deadline, the big trade was Brendan Hagel.
Yes.
and they gave up two firsts
a lot.
And Taylor Radish and Boris Tkachuk to get Brendan Hagel. Now, part of that cost is he's under contract for the next 2 years, and then after that he's a restricted free agent, which means you still have more years of under control of him.
Right.
Now, you don't know the number yet, but that's why the price was so high. Nick Paul is a pending free agent.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave up Matthew Joseph for him, who was going to be a restricted free agent with arbitration rights, and the Lightning didn't feel like they were going to be able to sign Matthew Joseph. So he became expendable. But Hagel was supposed to have the flash and kind of be the Yanni Gourde type. And Nick Paul, what you said about him is he's a centerman, good at faceoffs, can play all situations, and plays a north-south game. And does he ever play a north-south game? He's always going – really, he plays a north game. It's like he's always going north.
He's not retreating, yeah.
No, and his comfort level here, he's kind of fit right. Hagel kind of struggled a little bit, and I think he's coming along nicely. And I think by next year you're going to really like Brendan Hagel on this team. And people forget, too, because, when they traded for Gaudreau and Coltman, it ended up being Stanley Cup final, and they were pivotal parts. But the 8 to 10 games – after the trade deadline, before COVID shut down the season, they weren't doing that well.
Mm-mm.
They were struggling to, Blake Coleman was moving his family, and his wife was pregnant with their first kid, and your new teammates, and all this stuff. And Barclay Goodrow, they didn't have chemistry with anyone yet. They were trying to find their way. Nick Paul came in and pretty quickly found his way. And it's a testament to him. I mean, some players can do it better than others. And your game sometimes can translate, or just who you happen to play with. But we've seen Nick Paul also play with Kucherov, Point.
Yeah.
Cirelli, Stamkos. He'll play with Colton and Hagel. He can play with Maroon. You know, he can play anywhere up and down the line. I mean, he's making himself a lot of money right now as a an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah, he is.
And good on him. And I'm pretty positive the Lightning would love to keep him. And I'm sure they're probably talking about that or have expressed that interest to him because he fits on this team beautifully. But he just goes. And it's a solid game. He's strong. Like, you can't take the puck from him.
Nope.
He's a big guy. He's got a good shot, too. And he just goes north. And I love watching him play. And it's really fitting that if you think back to some of the biggest games – last year, when they clinched over the Islanders in Game 7, it was Yanni Gourde who scores the goal. When they win the Stanley Cup Final against Montreal, it's Ross Colton. When you win Game 7 against Toronto, it's Nick Paul with two goals. It's not your top guys that are scoring in those games. You've been getting that third line scoring. Last year you got it. This year you're getting it. And that's a key. Depth scoring is so important in the playoffs because a lot of times your top lines cancel out. And Nick Paul emerging this way right now, and Ross Colton as well, and it's you need that in the playoffs. If you remember back to, what was it, Pittsburgh back in 16, the HBK line, Hagelin, Bonino, and I forget who the K was, crushed the Lightning in that series, and they won. That third line or fourth line scoring is so important, and the Lightning got it in this series, and that's why they're advancing. Well, one of many, Vasilevskiy too, but that's one of the reasons they're advancing.
Yeah, and, good on Julien Brisebois, who they showed a shot of him when the game was over. He's just kind of, like, relieved but also proud, you know what I mean? Like, he did what he needed to do the last few years at the trade deadline, to make it all come together.
Mm-hmm.
And the players, and you forget, like, there's a lot of new faces. I know Stamkos was talking about, the pressure to win three, and he's like, look, really – he goes, those games, and this is true, people, if you play team sports, you know this, but, those two are in the vault, right? Like, we've got those rings. We won those championships with a group of guys. But this is a different team. There are guys on this team who have never won a Stanley Cup, who want to win their first. They don't know anything about the last two, each team, each year is different, and there's a different quest, and it doesn't really carry over the experience you have, which is great, and you got a lot of the same core players, and you want to do it again, but for some of these guys, they just want to win one, and they really have kind of on the fly sort of rebuilt this team in areas that they got better towards the end of the year, and certainly, you know, certainly with Nick Paul and those guys. So, man, it was unexpected to me that they could hold on to a 2-1 lead, because they didn't do it the previous two games. You know, they were up 2-0, like I said, games 5 and 6. They lost game 5. They won in overtime, not in overtime, but they won late in game 6. Mm-hmm. So, and now it's Florida. And this feels like, you know, in every championships, if you date, you know, going back to the NBA, I'm sure there's hockey's examples too, like, you know, the Bulls had to get over the Pistons, right? And, you know, there are certain teams like are just your nemesis. You're knocking on the door, and you've got to take down those guys. This feels like Florida's time, right? It feels like they've been building. They had incredible series with the Lightning. Lightning went on and won 2 Stanley Cups. Now they come again. It is, you know, this is how rivalries are made, or in the postseason. This series a year ago was probably the best, most entertaining, maybe the hardest series that the Lightning had on their way to a Stanley Cup. It was physical, seemed personal at times. The fans obviously can travel back and forth, which is cool. There's a lot, you know, Mike Wilbon aside, there's a lot to like about what has become of Florida and Tampa Bay lately.
Well, there's so much high-end skill on the ice on these teams. And much like Toronto. I mean, Florida, Toronto, and Tampa Bay have loads of high-end skill on the ice at all times. Toronto had, I don't want to say questions in goalie, but, you know, you weren't sure how Jack Campbell was going to do in the playoffs. He did very well in that series.
Mm-hmm.
You still don't know how well Sergei Bobrovsky is going to play. He finally won his second playoff series in his career. He beat the Lightning and with Columbus in 19, and then they just knocked off the Capitals. But how will he do? But Florida's got a ton of offense, a ton of skill, ton of speed. I mean, this is going to be another high-flying series.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if we've seen in from preseason last year when, what was it, one of the goalies got run? Andre Vasilevsky got run by, what was it, Lomberg?
Yeah.
That was it over in Orlando. And they don't like each other in the playoffs from last year. And now, you know, this is maybe the best two teams in the East. We'll see. You know, it's going to be a fun series. It's going to be that game won last year. I think Lightning won 5-4. It was in Sunrise, the first game of the playoffs. If you've never watched hockey, that was the game to watch.
It was insane.
Wasn't the best played game.
No. Because
there was mistakes in this, but it was up and down the ice, high flying, hitting, physical, just exciting. It was one of the most exciting 60 minutes of hockey you'll ever watch.
Mm-hmm.
And they're capable of doing that in spades this year. I mean, you know, if you just want to look on paper, the Panthers have added a ton of talent since last year. The Lightning have lost the Gord Gaudreau Coleman line. Now they've added Nick Paul and Hagel. Bobrovsky, you'd think maybe better. I mean, last year they used, what, 3 goalies in that series?
They used 3,
against Lightning. They had Bobrovsky, they had Dreger, and then they had Spencer Knight, the rookie.
Spencer Knight, who was
the one who played the last couple games.
Yeah.
So, you know, but presumably it's Bobrovsky's net. It's a different coach. Joel Quenneville's not there anymore. You know, he was let go, quit mid-season with part of the Blackhawks scandal.
Yep.
From 10 years ago, that he was the coach back then.
That's right.
And things not being reported. So Andrew Brunette's taken over, and they really didn't miss a beat with him. First-time coach. Look, this is going to be a fun series. Fans can go back and forth, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It's creating that rivalry, which the NHL has wanted for a generation here.
Yeah.
And finally, they've met in the playoffs twice. They should have met a few years ago in the playoffs. They didn't. Panthers got knocked off by the Islanders. I think it was in 16. That they were on pace to. They were the favored teams, but the Islanders upset the Panthers. So, you know, but you mentioned it feels like Florida's time. And, you know, there are teams that have to get over a hump. Toronto needs to get out of the first round.
Yes.
And maybe if they do, they'll go on and win several rounds.
They might.
Washington for years needed to get over Pittsburgh.
Yep.
And when they finally did, they went all the way to the Stanley Cup and won it that year. But I'll also go back to the Lightning. So they make the Cup final in 15. They're back in the Eastern Conference final in 16. They lose to the Penguins. They missed the playoffs in 17 by 1 point. Got off to a horrible start that season. Had a great second half, just 1 point shy. The next year, they go to the conference finals in 18. They're up 3-2 over the Capitals and end up losing that series in 7. Don't score a goal the final two games. And so then you come to 18-19, and the Lightning set all kinds of records. You know, they were the President's Trophy winner. They, you know, and Florida this year was only a couple points behind that pace from the Lightning 3 years ago.
Yeah, they rolled people, yeah.
Yeah. And they set records for the number of goals scored in a season, and they're flying. And that was kind of like the Lightning 4 years ago, or 3 years ago, whatever you want to say it. And the Lightning got steamrolled. Now, do I think Florida's a little better defensively than that Lightning team from then? Yes. But just because you feel like it may be their time, I mean, they may still have things to learn. I mean, they're still an upcoming team. And the Lightning still have that experience, and I think it showed in the Toronto series too. You know, yeah. How will they handle adversity in this series? You know, they didn't have a ton of adversity in the Capital series. They were down a game or whatever, but how will they handle adversity to the two times champs and your state rival? And we'll see.
Well, they know what's at stake. Here's what I wonder. The final game, or one of the final games, it might have been the final game, but one of the final games of the regular season, the Lightning went to Sunrise, and they played the Florida Panthers, and they whipped their tails. It was 8-3, I think, if my memory serves, or thereabouts. It was a 3-3 game, and then they took off. What if, and we've talked about this in the Stanley Cup Finals, like, or in the playoffs, sometimes, really, the momentum, you know, doesn't always carry over even from one game to the next, one arena to the next. Could there have been a little doubt put in the Florida Panthers' minds by that game, or was that sort of the Lightning's intention, which was, and they weren't playing great at that time, as I recall. They're just kind of scuffling around at the end of the season. But it was like, oh, yeah, we're still here, and we can do this to you in your building.
I think there was some of that for the Lightning. Now, how much does Florida put doubt in your mind because of that one game, 4 games left in the regular season? I don't think there's a ton. Now, the fans could.
Yeah. But the fans aren't playing. So
they're not. They're not. But you start at home.
Nervous building, though.
I mean,
yeah.
Much like we talked about Toronto. I mean, Lightning get an early goal in Game 7, and the fans get – you could hear them getting nervous up there.
It's you can feel it, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I don't know – you know, I don't think the players were, but the nervous energy in the building and, you know – as a home team, you like to feed off the crowd.
Right.
Well, you don't want to feed off that energy.
Right, exactly.
You know, I think if anything, you know, Florida's going to be hungry from last season. But I also think that, you know, the Lightning, I think there's an advantage to starting on the road in this series, just like it was last year. I think all the pressure was on Florida.
I would rather start on the road if I was a hockey team. Now, you know, we saw what happened in Game 7, but there was pressure on Toronto because they hadn't won a playoff series, and it didn't affect. Mm-hmm. That building, as loud and crazy as it was, I don't think affected the Lightning because they were the more experienced team. One thing, though, that will affect them is whether Braden Point can play. This Lightning team, and John Cooper said it, sometimes not having a guy on the ice can galvanize you. And, you know, Point never left the ice. He tried to come back and skate. He got his leg or knee or whatever it was kind of twisted up on him and tried to come back for his shift and couldn't go. But he stayed on the bench, and he was almost at one point, you know, inconsolable. I mean, he was really upset, and why not, right? Playoff time, what he means to the team, all of that, but wasn't able to go. But there he sat through the entire game, and, you know, his teammates tried to console him, but he wasn't leaving the bench. Which he absolutely probably could and should have. But if he's not on the ice or not Braden Point, you can't begin to measure, you know, what a loss that is to this hockey team because of all that he does. Because he's the engine, right? He's the guy that can carry it 200 feet and make plays. And you just simply, in power play and all, you just simply can't. I mean, they are a lesser team. And I think considerably without Braden Point.
No question about it. I mean, losing a player in the middle of a game can galvanize your team and everyone, it kind of can focus you.
Sure.
And really, you know, make sure that you're doing your job.
Sure.
In that. But to miss him, let's, and we don't know what his status is.
No.
But let's say he misses some time in the series or the whole series.
Mm-hmm.
That's different than missing part of a game.
Absolutely.
And seeing a guy go down and, okay, let's lock this down. Let's
pick
focus.
It up.
Let's,
yeah.
You know, missing him for an entire series. Now, to know you don't have him going in a game, there is a little bit of help with that because, you know, you've set your lines differently. You've changed your power play a little, you know, all those things. But outside of Vazzy, Hedman, and maybe McDonough, Point's the next most important person I wouldn't want to lose.
Yeah.
And not that Kucherov's fantastic, Stammer's fantastic, Sorelli, but Point can be that engine. Both helping in the shutdown line, which he did against Matthews and Marner in that series, to driving offense, to just pushing the pace.
Yeah, his speed is
unbelievable. He can almost drag his teammates along with him
mm-hmm.
when he's skating well and playing well.
And
you know, hopefully he's not out a long time. We know that he's been dealing with something down the stretch. He hadn't looked right for a while. He was starting to look better in that Toronto
series.
Starting
to look better, yeah.
But we know he missed a few games down the stretch in the regular season. They said, you know, maintenance, day-to-day type stuff, just precautionary things. But you got to wonder whether it's a knee, a groin, you know, whatever it was, that maybe that's it exacerbated whatever else he was dealing with. And we don't know what he was dealing with. They don't say in hockey, they tell you very little,
right?
If they tell you anything at all. You know, I had someone today ask me, do we know anything about Point? I'm like, it's the playoffs. They're not telling you anything about anything.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, it's 10:30 on Sunday night. We don't even know what game time is or when the series starts.
I was going to mention that. Yeah, after the game, Cooper, when he's like, no, I don't know. Was he hurt? Like, he was kind of like, yeah, no, that guy, they didn't go back. Yeah, and to that point, as we do this podcast, not knowing when they play, an extra day – we don't know the extent of his injury, but an extra day would seem to be in their favor.
There was a thought that the series could start Monday. I at this point, I would doubt that since it's less than 24 hours away and they haven't announced it. So
True.
At this point, I'm guessing Tuesday or Wednesday the series starts.
Yeah.
In Sunrise. Wednesday would be better. Now, there's a concert at Amalie Arena on Saturday.
Hmm.
So the series can't go Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. They could go Tuesday, Thursday, and Game 3 Sunday, or they could wait till Wednesday, Friday, and then Sunday for Game 3 at Amalie Arena.
It seems more likely, right?
So, but a lot of it depends on the other arena availabilities, too. I mean, the Rangers just advanced. They knocked off the Penguins in overtime as we're taping this.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what is Madison Square Garden got booked? You know, that affects playoff series and television stuff. The Dallas Stars are playing right now. They're up 1-0 at the end of the first. But the Dallas Mavericks, last I checked, were crushing the Phoenix Suns in Game 7, so they're going to advance. So there's building. They have to work around building concerts
the
NBA mm-hmm. tenants that's in your building. Madison Square Garden, who knows what else they got going on up there. They got tons of stuff there in New York.
Sure.
So, you know, there's arena availability that affects that, too, as well as television. So I'm guessing by the time you hear this podcast, the schedule may be out because I'm guessing it's coming out late tonight after the Stars-Calgary game. So.
Well, the more games, the more days they have between games, I guess, no matter what, it can only help a guy like Braden Point, although maybe the injury is to the extent where he can't play in this series or early in this series. We'll have to see. But they'll have time to make those adjustments, and, you know, you can't count out the Lightning. I mean, they wanted to advance. They're into round two. This is also going to be, I think, a 6 or 7 game series, I think. We saw it's been wild seeing all these 7-game series, how evenly matched these teams are and the swings back and forth. But that's what makes the NHL playoffs the best playoffs in sport, in my opinion. You know, the drama, you know, just how, you know, the strategy changes and you know, from one arena to the other with the different line change. I mean, there's so much that goes into these games, but the physicality of it, the war of attrition, the injuries, which are very much a part of the game. Goaltending, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so many facets that and then you'll get to an overtime, right? Is there anything like a playoff overtime, much less a Game 7 playoff overtime, which you know, you may see. So it's the best.
Five Game 7s in the first round.
That's crazy.
That's incredible.
Yeah. That's how evenly matched all these teams. But you know what? A lot of teams, especially in this conference, had over 100 points.
All eight did.
Yeah.
That's, that's incredible in the Eastern Conference, that all eight teams had over 100 points.
They were very evenly matched or achieved a lot of the same things. So it's like, you know, why wouldn't you expect the games to be close too? So we'll have plenty of time to talk about the Lightning once we figure out what their schedule is.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I was at the Rays game at Tropicana Field. The Rays win that series 2-1. They win the game 3-0. You know, the Rays, unfortunately, have had to put Manuel Margot on the 10-day IL injury list, and that hamstring was, I guess, barking at him quite a bit. And you could kind of see that. It's really unfortunate because there is not a bat in that lineup as good as his right now, at least. And so, you know, we talked to him after the game, and he was like, yeah, it's not exactly, you know, what you want to do when you're swinging it as well as he is. But he says it's feeling better. He doesn't think it's going to be something that lingers, and better to shut him down now than end up losing him for a couple months or so. But the Rays had the most Rays game ever on Sunday. So Alek Manoah is one of the best pitchers in the American League, and he's a giant. This guy is 6'6", 285 pounds. I mean, it looks like he's standing on a Little League mound 45 feet away from the batter. He is massive with great stuff, slider, even a changeup. And he has owned, you know, the AL East and the American League in general. He came into the day 4-0, 1.75 ERA, and he was cutting through them, you know, pretty good. They got a guy as far as second, I think, in the fifth inning. But as only the Rays can do, they managed to score 3 runs in the sixth inning. They got 3 singles, including a broken bat single by G-Man Choi, a fielder's choice, an error, and a wild pitch. And there's their 3 runs. And they shut out the Blue Jays with, what was it, 5 different pitchers coming out of the pen to, you know, to get it done against a really good Toronto team. They're just amazing. And Jeffrey Springs, who has now sort of been thrust into the role of a starter and has embraced it, he went 4 2/3, gave up a 2-out double, and they took him out of the game. But his line was impressive, you know. I mean, he gave up 4 hits, he struck out 2, and had no walks. And it's only the third time he started since he's moved from the bullpen to the rotation. They just bring in guys and they mow you down. And that Toronto lineup is hard to cut through, and they managed to do it, and they made the 3-run lead stand up. You look at their offense, most of those guys are struggling. A lot of them are. Kevin Kiermaier didn't play because he fouled a pitch off his knee on Saturday. He did get in the game as a pinch hitter and got a knock. He says he feels pretty good. But you know, you had guys like Wander Franco broken 0 for 18. G-Man Choi broken 0 for 18. So they got the hits in the one inning that they needed to. They had the right guys up. But offensively, they're challenged right now. But that pitching and that bullpen this year has been the story. My goodness, are they good. And they keep the ball in play. And the Rays, as we know, play great defense and support them.
But hasn't that been the story for years with Tampa Bay?
And as it much has, as, but
I mean, the focus on the bullpen gets put on the opener when they created it a few years ago,
right?
In that, but it's really been the number of arms, how different each one is.
They are different.
How each has a role, mm-hmm. and how they put them in a position to succeed against who's coming up for the other team, and then play great defense behind them as well.
Yeah,
I mean. You know, it's not just having the arms. It's not
when to put them out there.
It's when to put them out there, how to use them,
yeah.
how to position your defense behind them, how to play defense behind them.
Yeah.
And how Mike Zunino handles that staff, too. And, you know, as much as, you know, fans will rip him for his batting average. And it's not good, but and if he's not hitting home runs, it's really noticeable. But what he does with that pitching staff and the way he handles it and the number of pitchers, and like I said, you know, when they were in the World Series 2 years ago, I believe it was Fox had the graphic of each Tampa Bay Rays pitcher and their arm angle.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Left and right, and everyone was different. It's like it's a hitter, and when you play the Rays, you're not facing a pitcher twice usually.
No, not very often.
Definitely
no.
Not three times. So you're going to face three to four pitchers, five a game. Every time it's a different arm, and it's a different angle, a different speed, a different
lefty, righty,
everything. And when the opener first came out, I remember they were played the Angels, Sergio Romo. It was like in May, a few years ago. I think it was 2018. And one of the things the hitter said after was like, you know, I don't like facing a different pitcher every time. I don't remember which player said that, but it was like, it's not fair to do that or something along those. It's like, well, that's the whole point of it, is that you may start the game and you're facing a pitcher, and then we'll put a bulk guy behind him so that it's throwing you off as a hitter.
Right. And that's two at-bats, two different pitchers.
And that's part of the strategy with it.
Yeah.
And it's also, you know, okay, if your pitcher's not, you know, an ace-type material or top of the rotation guy, you're not facing the heart of the order to start. You come in at the bottom of the order and ease your way in the game, however you want to say it, you know. Get an inning under your belt before you go face, you know, the Mike Trouts of the world, or, you know, Bryce Harper is tearing the cover off the ball right now with a torn UCL, which is amazing.
I know, right? Don't ask him to throw, but he hit it a mile. You good? I'm good. Yeah, you know, Springs is one of those guys, too, that was kind of on a scrap heap, you know. Like, I don't know, he was doing another odd job. And they found him, and you know, now he's, like I said, they've moved him out of the bullpen. He's done well. Matt Whistler came in the game. J.P. Fireisen, I don't think, has allowed a run. You know,
I know he hasn't allowed an inherited runner to score all year.
Yeah, I think that's true. And he's just throwing strikes. He did walk one batter finally, but that's been the big difference in him, is that he's just attacking the plate with all his stuff. They use Colin Poche, of course, and Kittredge is as close to any as they have to an actual closer. But like any of those guys are brought in to high leverage situations to face, you know, the meat of the order, and they all come in and they all just post zeros. It's the damnedest thing I've ever seen, and it's what the Rays are about. It's what they're built on, pitching and defense. It's still their bread and butter. For as much as, you know, you love to talk about Wander Franco or Randy Arozarena, who's struggling pretty much, by the way. You know, that is the glue of their baseball team. So they're 21-14 now. They had lost four of their previous six. They hadn't been scoring any runs. They had scored just one run or fewer in three of those games during that 2-4 stretch. But they were able to grind it out, and grind is the word you would use. And Manoah deserved a better fate. I mean, he pitched really, really well. And yet, you know, Chapman makes a rare error, his first in 33 games. He ended up with two on the day. I think it was Manoah's first wild pitch of his career, which is crazy to think of. And it all happened in the same inning. And you look up and they're up 3-0, and the bullpen makes it stand up. So,
well, he wasn't the hardest luck pitcher of the day.
No. How about your
Hunter Green of the Reds, who makes
Cincinnati
like his
Reds,
11th career start or something like that? And he's,
oh my God,
the guy throws gas. I mean, it was a game he threw like 39 pitches over 100 miles an hour. He threw 118 pitches, had a no hitter through 7 1/3.
Yeah.
And they lose. And he takes the loss.
Yeah.
They lose 1-0. So he had a rougher start than Manoah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's do a quick football. We'll talk about the Bucks minicamp later this week, because we got all week to do that, and I got my thoughts. I had a couple stories over the weekend, covered them, of course, on Friday and Saturday. Sunday it was not open to the media, so I went and did the race. But we got a lot to talk about there. But before we leave, we'll end on this one. Breaking news. Drew Brees, have you seen this?
Yes.
In response to a report that Drew Brees is leaving NBC, and I think it's a mutual agreement, by the way. Didn't exactly knock the socks up Sunday Night Football last year as a broadcaster.
I think in this case, mutual was, yeah, we don't think you're the guy to replace Chris Collinsworth. And he said, okay, then I'll leave.
All right, then. Fine. Yeah, exactly. It was something like that. I mean, pick up your Joe Montana was a Broadcaster 2 award on the way out of the building. But Breeze might just be having, he might be funning people, or he might be serious. Because, you know, Tom Brady has done this before as well, and why not take cues from him? Breeze says he's undecided about his future, but he's mentioned the possibility of playing again. That's right. Jameis Winston just fainted. Go get the smelling salts, get him off the floor with his $21 million. Drew Brees, and he didn't say where, by the way, but Drew Brees has talked about the possibility. He says he's undecided, but maybe I'll play. Wouldn't that be something? And on top of it, has he found a new arm? Did they reconnect something that we're not aware of? Because the last time I saw Drew Brees, he had a tough time throwing the football more than 10 yards. So anything's possible, but how about that? How about if Drew Brees comes back and plays for the New Orleans Saints, would you give the Saints a better or worse chance of winning the NFC South if Drew Brees is their quarterback? And remember, Sean Payton is not the head coach.
Well, maybe Drew Brees comes back as a head coach and then Tom Brady goes and plays for him.
Well, yeah. I mean, he was going to try to play for Sean Payton in Miami. We all know that. Yeah. So that it's a very much a family circle going on.
Yeah, apparently Drew Brees wants to call games. NBC doesn't think he's that good at it. Wants him to do studio stuff. He doesn't want to do studio stuff. So
he says, I'm out and waiting for the next offer. Which, having watched Tom Brady get 37.5 for whenever he retires,
mm-hmm.
just like, yeah, whenever you want it, it's there. Maybe Brees is thinking, I don't know, maybe I should negotiate a deal like that and play a year, and then when I come out, I'll have, you know, $30 million or something a year.
But we know he can't throw the ball deep, but is he a better option than what they have in Seattle?
Yes. How about Carolina? Yes.
Pittsburgh?
I mean, listen, he knows all the answers to the test. He's you know, until Brady passed him last year about week four, he was the all-time leading passer. And that was, you know, they beat New Orleans en route to the Super Bowl in that divisional playoff game. But Drew Brees has the ball in his tight end's hands on the plus 40 of the Buccaneers with a seven-point lead going in to take a two-touchdown lead in the third quarter when that dude fumbled. And the game changed, not necessarily because Brees didn't play well. Now, once they got ahead of them and Brees had to throw and they knew it, he didn't really have much ability to throw it down the field. But he did reveal, I think, after the season that he had done something to his shoulder. And so he was playing a lot more hurt than people realized. And, of course, you know, we know his arm hasn't been the same since he, you know, took that hit in San Diego years and years ago. But, listen, if you told me Drew Brees was the Saints quarterback this year, I'd tell you, well, they've already owned the Bucs for the last 2 years with Brady here. They've won six or seven regular season games in a row. I think I'd still feel better with him than Jameis Winston. But, you know, it seems like a franchise that wants to move on. That, you know, not that Brees was an option before, but they invested, they guaranteed Jameis $21 million over the next 2 years, and I think they plan on him being their quarterback. So, you know, without, again, you know, some of the magic of Drew Brees is also Sean Payton. He's never played in New Orleans, at least, for another offensive coordinator, another play caller. And so that
well, he did
be
for 1 year
different.
When Payton was suspended. But
well, that's true. Yeah, you're right. Good point. Yeah.
But no. It's Payton's offense. It was, you know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Well, no, it was true, though. Somebody else was dialing it up, or as far as we know. Kevin James, perhaps. But, yeah, it's just wild, man. Like, and I can't help but think, like, Brady's had an influence on all this. You know, like, you can do whatever you want. Doesn't matter how old you are. Retire, come back, whatever. You know, call your own shots.
Well, I think where it's coming from is we know there's not 32 quarterbacks
well, that's true.
Capable of winning in the NFL.
That's very true.
And so if you're that good,
yeah,
particularly with the mental side of the game,
that's the thing,
is,
yeah.
You know, it's being able to diagnose the defense before the play is snapped.
Yeah.
Then are you better than some of the quarterbacks in the league now? Sure.
Well, and his receivers are better because they drafted Chris Olave. They got Michael Thomas back from that injury that knocked him out last year. And they just signed Jarvis Landry. Those are three fairly good receivers. And, I mean, I think Olave is going to be terrific when he gets healthy and is able to play. But if Michael Thomas is Michael Thomas again, like all of a sudden, you can match up with any team in the NFC South with those three receivers for sure. Even the Bucs, which you've owned anyway. You get Tyrann Mathieu to come in there and return home and play safety. That's a, you know, a big statement. So a lot going on in New Orleans, and it'll be fun to watch just how this all plays out. Anyway, we'll talk a lot about football, a lot about the Bucs. We'll find out definitively. You may already know when you hear this podcast when the Lightning will be going down to Sunrise to play the Florida Panthers in the second round in the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. The Rays begin a series against the Detroit Tigers. That's something to look forward to as well. Austin Meadows, I'm told, is not going to play in that series. He's a little nicked up, but we'll see how they're able to, you know, keep the momentum going and perhaps win another series here at the Trop after taking 2 out of 3 from the Toronto Blue Jays. Thanks for listening. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everyone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.